What is up, you beautiful people? Welcome back to the Built on Bitcoin podcast, where we cover all the cool stuff happening across Bitcoin, typically talking directly to the founders and builders actually creating that cool stuff. I'm your host, Jacob Brown, and today we're talking about Lightning. I know it's crazy. I think I'm like 122 episodes into the show, and I've maybe had two, maybe three episodes on Lightning, which is pretty wild. At least talking to founders. I've done update videos aplenty. So really excited about this one. I had to get Jesse on the podcast to talk about what he's building over at Amboss. So today I have Jesse Schrader on the podcast, which is the CEO and co-founder of Amboss. You can check it out at amboss.space. If you're a Lightning node runner, it probably goes without saying, you're probably using it to get some actionable data on your Lightning node. And that's what they do. They're a data analytics tool. They also have a channel marketplace. And they're building some other really cool stuff for Lightning node operators, because running one currently is very complex and you need actionable data to know how to run your node efficiently and route efficiently. So that's a little bit about what they do. And in this conversation with Jesse, we talk about his background, what he did before Bitcoin, it's kind of origin story and like the pain points that they were initially trying to solve for when they started building out Amboss. We talk about the current state of Lightning, kind of no BS, you know, what's going well, is excited about. Yeah, things coming down the pipeline. We talk about things like BTC capacity as a metric. So, you know, we hear this a lot, hash rate number go up. But most people don't understand that hash rate doesn't mean the network is more secure. There's other functions of that number that are important for network security. And so I was curious about his take on this BTC capacity number and if that's the best metric. TLDR, it's not. You got to listen to hear his response. So we cover a ton. This is a great episode to kind of get into the weeds about some of the nuances of Lightning. And I learned a ton. So without further ado, let's jump right into this episode with Jesse Schrader, CEO of Amboss.
Welcome to Built on Bitcoin.
Jesse, how are you doing today, my man?
Doing great. How are you?
I am fantastic. Very excited to have you on. Not sure how well you know this podcast, but I started as a Stacks podcast and expanded to Bitcoin broadly. But one of the topics for some reason I haven't covered enough is Lightning for whatever reason. And so very excited to have you on to kind of talk about Lightning, talk about Amboss, and being a Bitcoin founder. You know, that's one that doesn't get talked about enough. Kind of like crypto gets all the love, all the VC money is going to that side of the pond. And not enough goes and talks about the Bitcoin side. So, ton to discuss.
Certainly.
But maybe just to start off, for people who don't know you, just a brief background of yourself.
Sure. Yeah, so my background is environmental engineering. And let's see, I got really excited about Bitcoin in 2017 and wanted to buy some gifts for my family. And ended up paying really high transaction fees. And that pushed me into Lightning, where I was early hobbyist in 2018 and 2019, kind of figuring out the technology and, breaking things upon occasion and providing feedback. So really, I come to it as a user, before I really got into Bitcoin, I had jobs doing answering questions about class action lawsuits in like a call center scenario, and most of those were against banks. So it was really deeply understanding and empathizing with some of the problems where like you can't really control the policies that a bank may implement, but that affects you as a person. So I didn't like to see those policies being implemented, and I was looking for an alternative, and I didn't find one until Bitcoin, and then that really pushed me down the rabbit hole, Andreas Hansenopoulos was a big guide on understanding the technology and also some of the opportunities like Lightning Network to kind of show a path forward. And of course, Saifedean was very helpful at understanding the time preference element of things, which was just a great framework of, you know, how the world should develop.
Yeah. So it sounds like the so your initial entry point or fascination with Bitcoin was on the kind of like not freedom tech, but like being able to solve some of the problems that you saw in your everyday life with your kind of like web 2-ish job with like abuse of the financial system.
Yeah, I mean, this was definitely like traditional type job working in a call center, but just understanding some of the issues. Like, I mean, I studied environmental engineering because I wanted to, like, one, use like technical approaches to solve real human problems, and a lot of those are, you know, natural systems. So, like, how do you arrange technology, and what do you need to understand from like a, you know, confusing mess of operations, and actually be able to solve a human problem. So I definitely like take an engineering approach to a lot of the things I encounter.
We're gonna dance around in this conversation, so I'll take hard left turns. Apologies, but you mentioned that you wanted to gift them to people for, I think you said, Christmas, and I'm curious how back then were you doing that like tactically? Because I try to do that too, where I'll like I'll owe someone dinner, and I'll pay it back on Cash App through Bitcoin, and I'm like, I know they're just gonna sell it, and sometimes they'll be like, hey man, can you just send me cash, like please? I don't want to do with this thing. But it's like my way of like, come on, please, like slowly orange pill. So when you're given these gifts, like how'd you do it? Can you place us time wise? But like, were you buying a cold card? Were you just like setting up a key phrase and writing a note and then like saying like, here's a thing? Like, how are you doing it?
Interesting. My actual like buying gifts with Bitcoin was making actual purchases, and so like the purchases themselves were like. That was like buying Bitcoin on Coinbase and then sending it, like, let's see, I withdrew to like Electrum and then actually tried to send it over to Overstock.com, and Overstock.com had like a 15-minute window with which to actually get the transaction confirmed. And 15 minutes wasn't enough time to even get the first confirmation. And this was in late 2017 for Christmas. And so the fee market was insane. So it was about $60 to make an on-chain Bitcoin transaction. And I was having to pay next block fee rates in order to get that transaction confirmed within that 15-minute window. So that was really rough UI for actually making purchases. So one, you need that transaction finality, which kind of brings me to Lightning. But also just there's uncertainty on, you know, when a mining event is actually going to happen. Kind of to your other question about gifting Bitcoin, the way that I've done that so far is to, you know, create two copies of a seed phrase and just hand them the seed phrase and then keep one as a backup that is just like all locked up, just so, because like more often than not they're going to lose it. Like that's the reality, the unfortunate reality. I want to be able to trust that someone can write down a shopping list, which like is not the hard part. I think the hard part is actually keeping it forever, and keeping it secret, keep it safe. So that's one rough piece of actually gifting Bitcoin. If someone's savvy, open dimes are like phenomenal gifts. I think like the true Bitcoiners really, really love those, the real tech geeks. But for most people, you could just write down words and you could say, this is Bitcoin. And you can put this, you can memorize it, you could put this on your phone, and you can access this wealth wherever you are in the world.
Writing it down twice is smart. You have to be the trusted custodian for your friends because they're going to mess it up. So yeah, you don't want to have that, put $100 into it, have it appreciate like crazy, and they're like, what was the 12th word again? It's smart. It's like, I got spilled coffee on it. So it's good to have a backup. You mentioned something though, so like starting to go way into Lightning. I want to get to kind of a roundabout way, and one of the big ones that's interesting is that in the traditional marketplace, this idea of finality, people don't really understand it. So like the current system is something like I swipe my card and then there's kind of an approval process where the merchant takes on some of the risk or someone else does. And it could take a few days to a few weeks for it to be final, quote unquote. And Bitcoin is not like that. And I guess the first question is, it's kind of like seed phrases. There's a lot of responsibility in it where I'm not sure if most people are ready for seed phrases. And when it comes to instant finality, I wonder if, is there risk there too, where the benefits are, you know, the merchant is done, it's immediate, you can have assurances. But on the other side, is it things like chargebacks, these kind of things? Like, I don't hear that side talked about enough of like what we lose with instant finality. So what's your take on that?
Finality is a bit of a double-edged sword in that respect, because one thing that we lose is an ability to do refunds really well. So I've made a purchase, I don't really like it, or I want to return it. So how do I undo that transaction? And there's really no undoing with Bitcoin. It's either in your custody or it isn't. Simply by the way that we like kind of encrypt Bitcoin to a new destination. So when I'm talking about things like that, it's like on the on-chain front. So I'm proving that I have the key and then I'm like encrypting it to a new destination, which is pretty cool, but when it comes to like refunds, that means you're going to have to make a separate transaction. So now the original recipient of the money is going to have to make a new transaction back to you, which for the most part, like in these early stages, like is not an issue. But a lot of it will come down to like what will be your corporate reputation. Are you going to be someone that stands behind your products, and if someone isn't happy, you know, you'll return the money.
Do you think, so then kind of through that lens, do you think that consumer behavior moves towards do more due diligence on the merchant? Like, who do I trust? Or I could see another one being smaller value items that, like, if it goes to the nth degree nuclear, I don't get my money back, it's okay, it was just coffee, versus like I'm buying a car on Bitcoin and the risk there is like that calculus. Like, how do you see those dynamics playing out in the market if you had to guesstimate?
Yeah. One concept is like cash on delivery. So you've made the good, you've delivered it, and now I will pay you. And so that is, you know, more consumer friendly. Like I've certified that I'm happy with the product, so that would be one approach. The other would be more merchant friendly. It's you pay and then I'll deliver it to you, and then you'll receive it later. Kind of a hybrid approach is one that we're applying with Magma, our Lightning marketplace, which is a non-custodial escrow of sorts. It helps ensure that like there are certain obligations that a provider must fulfill, you know, when they're going to sell you a Lightning channel. And so once we have verified it, like as a neutral third party in this, then the payment can be processed. So like we have an ability to kind of like halt a payment going through. And like, so we're putting our trust wrapper on that. So we're putting our brand forward to say, we'll provide this, this service, which will ensure that you get the goods that, that you deserved and that, that you initiated payment for. But the settlement, the actual payment hasn't happened, until you actually get everything that you requested.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And yeah, the cash delivery also, that's clear. Okay. Cool. Then I want to start making our way towards AmBOSS. I'm curious how, you've been in Bitcoin for a while and you were pretty early to Lightning. What was the first pain point that you were like really solving back then when you started to build out AmBOSS?
We had to learn a bit what the pain points were, but a couple of things that we ran into, like dealing with the command line interface, that's intimidating for a lot of people, and you need a nice user interface with clicky buttons that you can navigate and understand this. And the second is one that I've learned is inherent to decentralized systems, which is discovery. So how do I know who to connect to? And now that there are so many possible options, like I need to make the right decision here, and find the best people to connect to, because each of those connections costs money. So like if you can imagine that you're using LinkedIn, like the professional networking site, and each of the connections that you make is going to cost $10. So if that's the case, you're going to want to do research on like who these connections are. Like, are they worth my time? Like what's in their resume? Like, who are they connected to? Before I actually even want to invest in making that connection.
Got it. So it gives you more data, and you've seen this. I've seen the decentralization piece is really hard to solve, and it manifests even in like news aggregation, where it's like it's hard to know what's going on across Bitcoin, even though there's only really like maybe six or seven pockets of like verticals. There's like L1, but that might have DLCs, and then you have Lightning, and then you have Arc, and then you have all the other layers. And I tried at this podcast to like aggregate as much as I can, but it's so hard. And that's just trying to stay up on like the news in one small sphere, which is Bitcoin. So when it comes to when you say discovery, what is, if I'm a Lightning node operator, right? What is the things I'm trying to like look out for, or like what am I getting from your tool that's helping me run a better node?
One piece is like in this decentralized market or decentralized network, there is a market, and like the market is kind of, well, how much are people charging to actually route a payment from place to place? It's like take our entire transportation network and replace everything with toll roads. So how do you get from point A to point B and spend the least? So one, you have to have a bit of an understanding of like, well, what are my own financial flows? Like, what do I actually spend my money on? And then how can I optimize the actual payment network around me to actually fit my own budgetary flows. So it's kind of like you get to kind of create your own toll road network around yourself. And if someone else wants to use your infrastructure, then you get to be the one charging the tolls for using your channels. If you want to like drive a payment along my road, then you can pay me a toll. But one piece is like, what is the median fee rate that people route payments at? And, you know, for for Visa and MasterCard, it's going to be like 3% or more. I think for Stripe, it's probably going to be like 4%, especially for small dollar payments. Whereas for Lightning Network, it's 0.03% is like the median fee that is being charged. So it's, you know, it's 100 times cheaper than any of those traditional payment alternatives. So that's just like one market element that is that needs to be figured out for this decentralized market. And like on Discovery, one of the Discovery pieces is like who is actually connected to the destinations. Sometimes it doesn't make sense for me to connect directly. Maybe I want to access a whole community of people. So I want to pay to a community in El Salvador. Well, do I have to connect to all of the individuals in El Salvador? Like, probably no. I could connect to just one hub, which is able to make the connections that I would want.
Got it. That's actually super helpful because I'm trying to grok some of these Bitcoin ideas is difficult. And for Lightning, that the one I've heard the most when it comes to how payments settle is like a bar tab analogy. And this toll road one is actually really helpful for understanding routing at some high level. But it does make me think, so is this why people have concerns around centralization, which is that the nodes, like River, for example, they're really good at having all the best toll roads for a low enough price that you just connect to River and then you get access to, you know, most of whatever the connections need to be that solve the most merchants?
It's like still an open question of like how this whole thing is going to evolve. But right now there's a bit over 18,000 public nodes on the network and over 70,000 channels, you know, between them. So like just River themselves, like they don't have 18,000 channels. So they're not connected to every single node on the network, nor would they want to. So like even at this like tiny scale of Lightning, you know, before it really starts picking up on the enterprise adoption phase, it's already phenomenally complex. And like there's a question about like how much trust are we going to put in this financial system in a single financial institution? Do we want more local control of money? And like my feeling is that like, yes, like I want to trust fewer people and don't want to have these like gargantuan systemic risks to the financial system. Like the too big to fail idea for a bank is like what we're trying to avoid. So I want to see more people running their own node and making their own sovereign decisions about like who do they want to connect to and how to construct this network. When we have more people that engage with this idea, that means that the network becomes more complex and you will have more difficult decisions to make about who to connect to. And so like that's one way that Ampos can win, is just helping to simplify very complex decision making, because one centralized entity is not going to be able to make all of the connections all over the world for a multitude of reasons.
Got it. On the enterprise question, so this is going to show my ignorance in how Lightning works, but like if Walmart, for example, wants to allow people to pay with Lightning, can they, because you said that the current fee rate is like 0.03, which is super low, especially compared to the traditional markets. Like you save so much money. So is there anything stopping Walmart from allowing Bitcoin at their terminals and say they charge 1%? And so there's still a benefit for, I'm assuming, other node operators to connect to Walmart, but they still get a decent chunk of that revenue. Like is that, given the construction of Lightning, is that one scenario that could play out? Is that if you have enough pull, a Walmart can demand that and you can choose to pay with Bitcoin or not?
Yeah. So when making a decision about like who to connect to, you're going to have to pay an on-chain fee to open the channel and another on-chain fee in the future to close the channel. And so the actual routing node operators can set the fee of like how much it's going to cost to route to this destination. And so when they're doing this like decision making, they're going to have to make like a cash flow guess about this to think, okay, like how much is going to flow to Walmart and how can I set my fees competitively so like my route will be chosen, and also like be able to recover my on-chain costs, you know, the channel open and the channel close, which is not that difficult of like a math problem. Like you could definitely figure it out. And there's just like back of the envelope calculations. But one thing that really changes the calculus in the favor of like really low cost settlement is that Walmart may actually make Bitcoin payments to other like manufacturers or suppliers. And so that means that the payment direction, it will actually flow both directions instead of just in a single direction. If it's a single direction, like there's only so much money that I can capture like as it flows from one point to the other, and then the channel is like no good anymore. But if Walmart starts like kind of a domino effect of a circular economy, then there's no reason that this infrastructure ever needs to change, because the payments will just flow back and forth and back and forth, and I'll be able to recoup my on-chain expenditures like without issue. And so like that's the real dream, is that you have a circular economy on the Lightning Network, and you have channels set up in really efficient ways to actually route payments and essentially bring the cost of commerce to zero. And like Walmart could charge their own fee if they wanted and just like capture the arbitrage as we replace these antiquated settlement methods with ones that don't involve, you know, chargeback risk and actually are more private for consumers.
Got it. That's fascinating. Okay, I want to take one step up. I'm curious, because you're so close in the Lightning environment, what's your pulse on the current state of Lightning? Kind of like what's going well, what's working, what's BS, what's on the horizon? Like, what are you seeing? What are you bullish on? What are you bearish on right now?
Let's see. The Lightning Network has gone through quite a bit this year. But what I find overall is that the ecosystem is extremely high signal. There's, as far as like real solutions to scams, we're extremely heavily weighted on the real solution side, that we're looking at on and off ramps. The ecosystem is building out. Still an open question on like how the regulatory environment is going to shape up. But then on protocol development, it's really solid. I'm like very excited about Taproot Assets. And because I think a lot of people are uncomfortable with Bitcoin's volatility. And also like, where can I buy things with Bitcoin if I'm holding Bitcoin? So like I tried to pitch Lightning to my local sandwich shop the other day, and I really got, I got a whole laundry list of issues that he's concerned about that hadn't even crossed my mind, that he runs such like a tight cash flow operation that he needs to resupply. And so if he's going to accept Bitcoin, he needs to be able to spend Bitcoin to actually buy the products. It's like super small margin. And he needs like every penny that he can collect. But he, like, the only reason I brought it up to him, because he was like, cash is king. He had like signs everywhere. He's like, I don't want to have to charge you an additional 4% on your purchase. But that is what payment cards are necessitating, that I have to charge you more. Otherwise I'm losing, you know, $15,000, $20,000 a year just to the payment method. On things that I'm like bullish on is people making smarter decisions about their channels, and like who they're connecting to, and also how to run a sustainable node. Because, and the reason that I'm really bullish on that is because we had a massive challenge this year, which was all of the competition for Bitcoin transactions. Ordinals inscriptions like created just like it wreaked havoc on like some of the economic decision making that Lightning node operators are making. Like if they're planning on charging zero fees, like it's a gift to the network, but then have a risk that like their channel could close and they could pay an extremely high fee just to close out the channel, then their risk calculations are off. Is this a good use of my savings if I'm putting this at risk due to a forced closure, like when there's so much competition for like ordinal subscriptions? I went a little bit deep there, so.
No, you had covered a lot. This is actually a really interesting one because I like the thesis of Bitcoin L2s, but part of me is very hesitant that they're going to get any traction until L1 is sufficiently unusable, I would say, where it's just expensive. It's still pretty cheaply priced if I'm trying to send even $100 on Bitcoin. Like, it's not that bad. Lightning has its efficiencies, but like there's a different calculus there. Like, do I really have to do that, or can I just send this regular transaction? And so that was really eye-opening, seeing Ordinals go crazy and start to stress test some of the current limitations of the Lightning implementation. So what is being worked? Like, how are people responding to that? Is it just a calculation of your financials to see is it worth my time, or is there things being built to make this more efficient? I see AI seems like a natural play for channel efficiency. Like, what are people thinking about right now? What's coming down the pipeline?
One thing is like whenever there's a challenge to Bitcoin or to the Lightning Network, there's a really like kind of an antibody response and to like fix this issue. So one thing is we've seen a lot more attention from the protocol developers on figuring out why there are forced closes and like what to do about it. Where that wasn't a problem in the past, like now it is a real financial problem. The other is just leveling up the operator's knowledge to make better decisions. And as far as like Amboss is concerned, you know, we're very focused on from the network level, how can we deliver insights to people on how to make better decisions and do so in a sustainable way, so that they can continue operating a revolutionary payment network that, like, Longtail will be far more efficient, regardless of like what is happening on chain. So with more stability for channels that we're seeing from the protocol, more use cases that we would see with Taproot assets, more adoption that we would see when the fees become lower. Those are all, you know, reasons to be excited. With just naming a few of the things that are coming down the pipeline. Of course, there's also like Fedi and Cashew, which are like focusing more on the privacy side, and Chami and Mint. So that would open up a whole slew of like new use cases. But yeah, the ecosystem is rapidly maturing. There's a lot to be excited about.
Love it. Okay, so for what you guys do, you mentioned a couple things, the discovery piece and this Magma marketplace. What else do you guys offer, or what's coming down the pipeline, like kind of those two buckets?
Yeah, so we've been running our Magma marketplace since April of last year, and we've seen just over 120 Bitcoin actually settled in channels, and that brings about to 2,500 channels. We're getting very close to that number, and that's exciting for us, because what Magma does is actually sets up a market for, like, what is the value of liquidity, and what is the market pricing, and that's going to change regardless of what the the market will change based on the cost of on-chain transactions. So whatever happens with ordinals and inscriptions or other uses of the Bitcoin blockchain, we'll actually see the market develop for Lightning itself. And with that comes the value of liquidity. So a couple of months ago, we began publishing what we called our liner metric, which is the Lightning network rate. And that shows both the costs of buying liquidity on a regular basis, which is around 3%, and also what is the type of yield that or return on capital that a Bitcoin holder could earn by selling Lightning channels or leasing Lightning channels. I'll just say sell because it's easier, much more understandable. But yeah, I'll sell you a Lightning channel for a month, and you can pay $10 for that, and you'll have like guaranteed low cost settlement to from my entire network. So your customers will be able to enjoy that. What's next for us now that we've had this Magma marketplace? We found that we actually have like quite a bit of Bitcoin that people are willing to offer for Lightning channels, but what's missing is really the automation on the merchant side. So what we found is that Magma is buyer constrained. So with limited demand for buying channels, like the amount of yield that you can get is actually it's not going to be that high, because there's lots of providers out there that are willing to do this. But if you're running a Lightning business, you need to be focusing on selling your products, not on troubleshooting your payment system. Even if you have like a 10-minute delay from your like Visa card going down or like your card processor going down, that means lost business. So if you're futzing about with that, like, it's not a good use of your time when you should be out there making and selling products. So really, our focus is, our next focus is really reducing the amount of time that it requires to manage channels and to manage a Lightning node, because you should be able to receive payments reliably from anywhere in the world at very low cost. And so we're constructing the user experience to enable that.
Do you think there's on a long enough time horizon? I mean, I think I know the answer, but does it get to a place where all of this is mostly automated? Like for Stripe, you're trusting one company, but like anybody can just take payment for anything. Shopify too. Like I could spin up a storefront for nothing and immediately start selling things. So it sounds like there's still a big burden to manage this, especially as you scale. Do you see that changing on a 5-10 year time horizon where it's just like, you might go to Amboss and you guys have a one-size-fits-all kind of like API or something that just like solves 80% of a small business's issues?
Yeah. And unfortunately, the answer is it depends. And really what it depends on is what are people willing to share and what do they want to keep private? Because what I have when I run my own node is I have complete control over it. I have the private key, and that allows me to make all of the decisions about how this piece of hardware and software operates. When I want to go more automated, that may mean that I'm giving up control to someone else. So I'm delegating things. Now, another way is like if I want to get insights about something. What we're seeing in a recent trend is people are handing away their view-only macaroons. So that means like someone that has the view-only macaroon can see every single thing that is happening in your node. And people are handing this away just to get additional insights about how to run their Lightning node. Now, we've taken a different path, which requires less data and gives you a little bit more incremental control over what is the actual data that you're sharing versus, like, what are you keeping private to yourself. So we announced, like, a feature about a year ago, which was channel balance sharing. So I can communicate to Amboss, or I can even choose to make it completely public, like, what is the actual balance of my channels. And if you hand over your view-only macaroons, not only are you giving that information, but you're giving everything about, like, your payments, your invoices, all of it. And so you should closely guard that if you believe that, like, surveillance is a concern and you think that privacy is paramount. So we can deliver, like, incredible tools to end users and to node operators. But the real question is, are they going to just make a decision that privacy doesn't matter and we end up in, like, a Venmo-type situation where, like, all of my payments are not only shared with a huge corporation, but also shared publicly, which, like, it boggles my mind that people would share that amount of payment information when all of this is, like, all of those, that payment information is ripe for machine learning meta-analysis. So what's currently happening with traditional payments is, like, I swipe my Chase card and, like, it's like Chase is going to sell the information to an advertiser to sell me more relevant ads. That's the business model there. But, like, for us, like, if you give us additional information, we'll provide the highest quality of service that we possibly can, given the limited amount of information that you have. And we've enabled features so you can have fine-grained control over what you share and what you don't. If you decide to share more, like, we will be able to provide a higher quality of service. But if you choose to keep that private, we won't be able to. It's like a, like, your doctor's entire diagnosis of you is, like, based on a picture of you. Like, we'll be back in, like, COVID doctor visits days where, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, I'll show you something. Can you look into my eye? Like, do I have something in there? And then they're just going to say, like, come into the doctor's office because, like, we actually need to take a closer look. It's just not as effective as a diagnostic tool if you don't share some level of data. But then, like, what we're left with, if you don't share anything, is, one, a ton of guesswork, and, like, also very difficult UI. Like, you have to be an expert. And I think the reality of this is, like, people are not going to be payments experts. This is a very select few of people that care deeply about how money works and how payments operate.
That makes a lot of sense. Quick note for context. What's a macaroon? I heard you drop that word a couple times.
A macaroon is kind of like a permission set, and the macaroons are, like, also getting better. So, like, maybe I could say this macaroon allows you to access my node during these hours and can make and can sign transactions that are like this size of Bitcoin. So, like, you're allowed to, like, if it's super fine grains, be like, okay, you're an account manager, and, or, like, you're an accountant, and so you'll be able to view all of my transactions. But for someone, like, maybe, like, just operations, and maybe they just need to know, like, what's the general node balance? Do I have enough liquidity to continue to receive payments? And they don't need to see every single transaction. They just need to know that the thing is functional and that it's meeting their service level.
Got it. Like, a great name for something that doesn't sound anything like a macaroon.
Macaron is the little cookie.
It reminds me of my Android days when I was, like, flashing my ROM, like, every week, and it was, like, Eclair and, you know, Frosty, like all the ROM names were like delicious things. And it's just like, okay, I'm supposed to be changing my phone software. Now I'm hungry. This is getting weird. Same with Macaroon. Okay, couple more questions. I want to start to bring this to a close. What I'd love to get some more clarity on is people look at certain metrics and they think that they're good because they go up. Hash rate would be one, which is like, you know, it's, you have to look at it bracketed by the cost of electricity to really know the cost of like producing that hash and how secure the network is. Number go up on hash rate is not necessarily mean more security. And I've heard it's the same with BTC capacity on the Lightning Network. So I'm curious if that's true, where it's like that number go up is good, or if we are more efficient, there's a local median that might be lower than what is today, but we're actually doing more payments. So is that correct?
No, I really don't like capacity as a metric for Lightning Network success. I would look at Lightning nodes and public Lightning nodes as kind of a metric of success. That means people are taking self-custody and that provides long-term sustainability for the network. What we saw recently is capacity of the Lightning Network fell off a cliff because it was primarily because River was doing channel maintenance, and they actually closed a lot of channels that were no longer functional because they had payments only in one direction and all of the liquidity was used up. And so when like you're searching for a route to make a payment, like a lot of those channels, like you couldn't actually make a payment through those anymore. They were essentially dead. So River closed those old channels, and that's like a great thing for maintenance of the network and having higher payment success for this network. And that like payment success rate would be a much better metric when we're competing against, you know, Visa, MasterCard with 99.99% reliability, whereas, you know, Lightning Network may only be at like 60%. And we would want to see that much higher. But capacity itself, it can go down, and that will be a good thing. That means payment success will likely go up. It doesn't mean that River is afraid of Lightning or thinks it's a dead technology. In fact, they're investing far more resources into it because it's such an important technology for the future.
Got it. I like that payment success rate. That makes a lot of sense. Okay, last question I have, kind of moving into the VC space, because that's where I work when I'm not hosting this podcast and talking to great people like you. And for people that don't know, there's been hundreds of millions deployed into crypto every year, and that includes Bitcoin. But if you bracket it, Bitcoin gets like, I think it's less than 5% of VC money goes into Bitcoin-focused startups. And that's, you can make a lot of assumptions there, like token speculation, whatever. But it does imply that there's a smaller pool to raise from potentially as a Bitcoin-focused founder. It's just harder to raise potentially. And from what I've seen, there's some truth to that. But you raised a pretty big round. So I'm curious, what was your experience going out, attracting money from VCs and raising as a Bitcoin-focused company?
It was difficult, and primarily because understanding this technology is almost a prerequisite for being able to understand the scale of the opportunity here. So a big struggle for us was finding the right comparable. So like, what other company is like disrupting global payments and doing that with a straight face? There's not very many seed stage companies that have that type of ambitious vision. So like, what can I compare it to? And so for us working on data analytics, what we did was look at like automotive industry and look at healthcare. Those are industries where you have very expensive decisions. And I think long-term, Bitcoin will be an industry where you will have to make expensive decisions. And that will be an on-chain transaction. There will be a lot of competition for Bitcoin. And so that means, one, you have complex decision-making and you need data analytics to support it. And those are expensive decisions. So that starts to support a data analytics industry. And so I looked at, what is the data analytics industry that supports automotive? What's the data analytics industry that supports healthcare? And what fraction of the overall market cap do those data analytics industries represent? And what I saw is generally it's about 0.25%. So when we're looking at the types of payments in the world that are going to be disrupted by Bitcoin payments, remittances is obvious. So this is $580 billion that is transacted every single year through remittance providers. Already, that's a massive industry. We only want 0.25% of that. And that already represents a multi-million, if not billion-dollar industry right there. Now, when you're looking at global digital payments, this is $9 trillion every single year that are made. I see Lightning as like an obvious solution to this. We have a lot of things to build there, but the technology is sound. The finality, we've essentially removed the ability to have trust with our peers, and it's very resistant to like systemic risk. And I don't see that with any of the other alternatives. So when I'm like presenting that, this is a bold vision, and that for the VCs that can understand that and grok that and see that Bitcoin is stable, relatively unchanging, and then Lightning is the real rocket fuel to help it disrupt payments, then it starts to make a lot more sense to VC partners.
Got it. That's very interesting. Yeah, because there's a, for kind of founders listening, if they haven't fundraised yet, it's always hard to talk to VCs, because if it's too easy to understand, they either assume like the market's too small or someone's already done it. And if you go too far into like the willy-nilly like pipe dream, that's exactly how it seems. Like it's too early. And so you're always threading this line. And so, yeah, I like your characterization, because if you look at it as $9 trillion in payments settled every year, even 1% of that being taken by Lightning is $900 million, which is still massive. So that's an easy sell. Any advice for founders who haven't gone through this process yet and they want to fundraise that you would bestow on them?
Let's see. Y Combinator is great, but they're not right on everything. And get a network of founders that are willing to advise you, to help you shortcut some of these things, find the right books to read. And like what you have as a founder is like equity in your company. So you can actually grant that to advisors to help them, to help keep them incentivized, even a small portion of this to actually support you and be help you shortcut a lot of things, because like the scarcest resource that you have is your time as a founder to actually maintain all the operations, understand what's happening in the industry, in the market, and actually be able to make decisions and put out product. Because like we've been following a very like lean startup methodology where like we have to ship in like a minimum viable product here, and show that we have like the traction and we have the momentum to create the $1 billion business that we're planning to make.
That's great. I love it. Cool. I don't have any more questions. This has been fantastic. Any closing thoughts or things you want to kind of riff on before we close out?
I think that's about it for me. Yeah, it's talking to you has been great, and I would love for people to check out Ambus.space, and as we automate Magma, I'd love for people to try that out and start supporting this like decentralized operators that are making a whole payment system possible that has incredible potential to just improve people's lives. Kind of like what has been the theme of this past year is like inflation, and like bringing down inflation. But whenever there is inflation, like think about the payment system that is taking, you know, 3% of it. If your margins are super tight on all these products that you're selling and you're having difficulty making ends meet, just think about how much money is being wasted on an inefficient payment system, that like that payment method is being baked into all of our prices. They're not showing you how much the merchant is having to pay for this. They're just kind of abstracting that away and increasing the prices. But you as a consumer don't have to pay that all the time. You don't have to have that additional loss, and we can move to a more efficient society by improving the payment system.
I love it. I love it. Yeah, it's always shocking to me how few people, when I ask them, have actually used Lightning. It's just still that early. And when you use it, it's freaking magical. Like, it goes from your phone to, like, I see a balance on Stacker News in no time flat, and I can just go, like, zap things away. So it's truly amazing. And the first step is trying Lightning. So call to action to people, like, go out there, take a little sliver of your Bitcoin holdings. You still hodl the majority, and go spend it somewhere. Just do something small with it. But then if you start running a node, you're probably going to be using Amboss for some of your stuff to keep yourself in the best standing. So yeah, I'll drop all the links below so people can be in the loop when the time comes. But man, Jesse, thank you so much for coming on. This has been fantastic.
It's a real pleasure, Jacob. Thanks.
Thank you for listening this far into the episode. If you found it enjoyable, please do like, subscribe on whatever platform that you're listening on. YouTube does me a huge favor to like and subscribe. Find me on Twitter at Jake Blockchain. Show me some love. I reply to every DM. And if you are a Bitcoin builder that is kind of at the forefront of building new use cases, whether it's L1, Lightning, Stacks, Rootstock, Rollups, Ordinals, BRC20, I want to talk to you. So when I'm not doing this podcast, I am the sourcing partner at the Bitcoin Frontier Fund, where we invest in Bitcoin startups at the earliest stages, give you access to whatever you need, whether it's legal, product, fundraising help, as well as capital. So let me talk to you. You can hit me up again. Find me on Twitter at Jake Blockchain and shoot me a DM. I'll read everything. Love to talk to you guys. All right. Peace.
Welcome to Built on Bitcoin.
I know that things don't always go your way, but I'll be right.